woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Craig Pappas on the board. S&P futures down 20. NASDAQ futures down 105. This is after what is described as a limited strike from Israel into Iran. I have oil. It's down. It's actually down 40 cents after it had a 3% spike. Evidently, this wasn't much of an attack. I don't know. Nobody's even really commenting on it much. But gold evidently traded 24.11. Now it's 23.96. It's actually down $1.60. So I don't know. Doesn't seem like much of an attack. Everybody diverted airplanes around Iran when this was going on. Evidently, planes fly over there, and a couple airports are closed. But doesn't seem like Israel isn't exactly commenting yet. I'm trying to find out what's going on here, but I don't know that anybody's telling anybody. Greg, what do you think? It seems like not much of a first and initial spike, and somebody knew enough to buy gold and oil, and then somebody knew enough to sell it. So information was flying in the middle of the night, eh? I don't know if, did you get a memo of some kind?
I heard there was some strike, or there was some cyber attack here, meaning possibly they took out the 911 calls.
Ah. Well, we have Mr. Kevin?
Yeah, you do. Good morning.
Morning.
Limited strike sounds like the White Sox pitching staff.
Yeah. Pitching's been better than hitting, though. Well, they're both been bad. But
low hurdle.
Yeah.
Very low hurdle.
Are they going to lose more than the 62 Mets?
Oh, that's a tough question. I think it's possible, yeah. Especially after they get to the trade deadline and trade off their limited number of good players.
Well, the when they traded Dylan Cease, has he already beat the Cubs twice or once or something in San Diego?
Yeah, I think he got him once.
The guy said something about, well, the guy from Double A has a very good chance to be a good big league pitcher 2 years ago, and I'm going, they just give away a very good big league. In other words, there's some chance one of the guys you got might be a Dylan Cease. It's kind of a limited sort of positive thing to say, wouldn't you say?
Well, yeah, but let's not overvalue Dylan Cease either. He had one really nice year, and then he's had a lot of other ups and downs, and he's pretty much a five-inning pitcher, and that's it, because he throws a whole lot of pitches. So, you know, I think they got a lot for him, all things considered, and, you know, locally in Chicago, but I think people kind of overvalued Dylan Cease. He was good, but I don't think he was great.
Well, I mean, it's, you need five guys that are good, right? You can't, anyway.
Well,
but
you also need guys who are going to pitch you, give you some 6 and 7 inning outings once in a while. It's killer on your bullpen if you have starters who never go more than 5 innings.
I have as we were talking about last night, I actually have talked around on the show this week. I mean, what is your breaking point? Like, I had a long conversation about it yesterday with Dan. You talk about, you know, budget issues, the federal end. You talk about a lot of stuff. What is the breaking point? When do you have to change policy? You know, the city of Chicago, obviously, when do you change policy? When do you say, look, this is, you know, we're in a DEFCON 4 here. What are we? You know, you when are we going to get to the point where if the starter The minute the guy, you know, passes gas in the fourth inning, you pull him. When do you get to the point where these guys don't need 4 days rest to go four innings, for God's sake? When relievers are going two innings every other day, it seems.
Well, yeah, and you know, that's great if you can have a really, really deep bullpen. But even then, we saw that with the Cubs last year. They had this really good, you know, seventh, eighth, ninth inning setup, and by the end of the year, they were all on the injured list because they had been so much. I think that's a problem, and you know, we're sort of getting the. I think we're seeing the game change a little bit again, and you know, getting it's more about getting guys out. You know, you look at it from the offensive side of baseball. You know, what's the real team part of offense aside from hitting behind runners and, you know, making contact and all of that, which is important. But it's also seeing a lot of pitches because you want to hit against the other team's middle relievers. Those are the worst pitchers on their staff. So you want to get that starter out of there as much as you can. So, you know, if you go up there and you're out, you know, you make an out on the first two or three pitches, you know, you're not advancing that cause at all. And so, that, you know, I think from the pitching side, they're starting to realize that it's okay to hit the other team's bat if you make them hit a ground ball.
Well, I agree. I mean, you look at trends, okay, and trends are trends. Things change. But when you have, we just talked about Kenny Holzman the other day. Well, Kenny Holzman pitched, you know, 120 pitches a game and won on 4 days rest, or 3 days rest. And you say, well, wait a minute, that over time, when you, especially now that you want guys essentially pitching as hard as they can all the time, where in those days I think they paced themselves a little bit, you say, okay, we're going to give guys 4 days rest or whatever. So. They take more out of themselves now or something. But now you drop back to, wait a minute, nobody goes over 100 pitches. I mean, 90 and you're out of there. I mean, I don't think you need, I'm just saying, at some point when you want somebody out there less and less time.
To the point, Tom, where now we're, you know, they're pulling people out of no-hitters when they hit their pitch limit.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is one of the ways to help your bullpen is to have one more guy in there. If you have five people, you have five guys that are starters out of, say, 12 people. Well, you can't have four people every single day unavailable, right? Maybe you should go to three people unavailable and add one of the, make your crummiest starter. You're going to pitch every 4 days, but by the way, as soon as you get to 95, we're pulling you, we don't care what it is. Okay, well, that's fine, but what if someday you get down to 60 pitches? Are you still going to give people 4 days rest? When the reliever comes in and pitches 35 2 days in a row,
once you stress out the arm, it's you know, you're done. So
yeah, I mean, it's
it doesn't matter if you stress out your arm with 60 pitches or 90 pitches. At that point, you're used.
Well, I'm saying it. They seem to use some relievers how many days in a row? Part of it is I think the relievers, for whatever reason, get to a point where they can warm up faster. Where a starting pitcher seems like it's about an hour for the guy to get rolling, right?
Yeah, it's routine. Yeah, it's whatever it's basically a workout regimen.
Yeah, but your reliever, he can go out and throw 10 pitches. We need you if it's a warm day, right? It's about what he gets. Maybe you get more than 10, but you know what I'm saying. Then you get 8 when you get on the mound. But it just seems kind of weird. We were talking yesterday, Kevin, and I. Two things, just as an everyman's view of the world. The stock market, I've been talking the last few weeks about, you know, just be careful with these rates going up. There's a strong chance that this is not your last 8 years market that you're about to face. Because it's a turn, like the opposite turn in some ways that I saw in 1981 or 82. And just be careful. I never give advice on sell a stock, buy a stock, because you never know. There's millions of currents of information that's flying to the market. But I'm just saying, based on my experience, if you have a 6% 10-year rate, don't expect the valuations in the market, in most cases, to be the same as when that number was 1.5. You got competition coming from fixed income, not to mention the fact that if you discount your future earnings, the place is worth less. Those are just facts. A lot with a lot of ifs in there. And yet, I don't understand. Last night we were about Wednesday night. Actually, you're never going to guess. Mr. Flanagan showed up.
I heard discussion of that yesterday.
Yeah, and it was good to see him. And he always adds. And you know, a couple of the guys there, they're aware I manage money. And the one guy was saying, well, you know, I've got these some of these stocks that are high flyers, and we've done real well with them. And you know, if they go down for a while, the operative word there is a while. And I'm all right with that. They're up a bunch and blah blah blah. If they want to go back down, you know, they'll come back up. And I don't. Boy, I tell you what. How much pain, if any, that these things actually are going to go down? Well, they have been for a few days in a row. How much pain do you feel you need to give to some company? What loyalty do you think you have? I mean, obviously, there's tax implications and all that stuff, and those kind. I mean, it's not simple as when I was a trader, it was much simpler because the tax implications were not the same. Because if you pay taxes on what you made during the year, not on any individual purchase or sale. So for a professional, the tax implications are different. So there's a slight difference in my point of view and a lot of people's. But still, if you have a stack, I said, you know what? I'd love to have you as a client, and I think maybe I will. But I said, but you know. And I said, but here's one thing we're just never going to agree on. And, you know, I'm going to say I'm right, but I'm not going to push it. If we talk tonight about you having a stock that's trading 100 and you paid $5 for it, and next week it's at 90, you still think you're up 85, I think you're down 10. You know, because one thing you learn as a trader is you mark yourself to market every morning. I'm expecting every retail person to do that. One of my first days in the pit, some old guy who's probably not as old as I am now, came by and he said, you know, there's a couple of new guys there, and he says, if you want to be successful, don't ever remember what you paid for anything, because it doesn't matter. It's do you want it today or not, at the price it is today. Because it's today's price, think about it, you bought it today. Or should you buy it today, or should you keep it? And you know what, Kevin, I can talk, I'm blue in the face to the retail community, and nobody gets it, or nobody, I can't turn anybody's view to that, so I guess I'm giving up. Just saying.
It's despair, Tom. What's the line from Shawshank? You know, hope is the a good thing. It's it's the only thing. Something like that. On the other hand, despair. Yeah, you might as well just end it all.
Yeah, I read some stuff last night. I'll pop one out every couple of days because they're pretty good. Winston Churchill's greatest one. He said something about if you're going through hell, you better keep moving. It's the only way you're going to get out of there. I'm sitting there going, boy, that makes a lot of sense. If you're going through hell, don't stop. Keep going. So what? Are the Israelis and the Iranians now going to be like the Irish and the Brits, where everybody has to make the last attack until it just keeps going and going and going? Or what are we doing here?
Well, it could be, you know, like spy versus spy, because it is way closer to Mad Magazine than it is the Irish and the Brits. Is it that, you know, I mean, what I think the Israelis did was basically said, okay, you tried to hit us and failed miserably. Now it's our turn, and we're just going to show you that, you know, because they didn't do that much as these things go.
Don't look like I can't find them doing hardly anything.
It was them saying, "Hey, just so you know, you can't stop us, but we can stop you."
Well, I mean, this going on back and forth is the who shot the first thing. I mean, I guess you could count, you know. The Houthis taking a Israeli flagged or Israeli bound tanker. I guess you could count. I'm saying that when you start counting this stuff, it gets kind of weird. I mean, being Irish, I couldn't figure out who, you know, the Hatfields and the McCoys. I mean, okay, the Israelis struck in Damascus the Iranian consulate. Now, by international law for a gazillion years, that is sovereign territory of the country that has. Okay, so if you were a neutral observer, you might count that as a strike against the homeland. So then the Iranians, whatever they did with these 300 drones, And I'm agreeing with the general was on last weekend. There's something more to this. Whether they just wanted to see how much Jordan and these other people and us and the Brits would commit to stop the strike and how much it would cost us or something. I mean, the Iranians couldn't possibly have thought that the garbage they sent over there was going to be effective. About 1,300 miles away. Maybe they did, maybe, or whatever. I don't know.
Maybe they're just delusional. I don't know.
Maybe they're just delusional. But so now all of a sudden, I mean, they killed one person, which is already always horrible. But not as many as the Israelis killed in the embassy. Now, and I don't know how to count, Kevin. That's why I'm flailing here. So now all of a sudden, you mean the Israelis say, okay, now
at the moment, the Israelis are counting back to last June. So
okay.
That's where they're going.
Okay, and I'm stunned, and I really would love, you know, I'll bet if Mike was still in the Army, he'd be so damn busy. I'd want to know, boy, if I was, I suppose I'd be an idiot by thinking, I want to know how the hell all the North Korean weapons got to those guys who originally invaded, you know, Hamas people that did all that damage and all the brutality and stuff on wherever. Year and a half ago, I wonder how the hell they got there. Okay, how's this money? How's this being paid? Are we taking a ship full of oil and we're running it to North Korea and then we're loading it up with weapons and we're doing a barter thing? I mean, I'd want to know. Maybe I hope the president and his people or the people in Congress that are on those double secret committees. I hope they're sitting there asking all these questions. I bet they are. Kevin, I really hope they are. They went, okay, when? How do all these people fit into this thing? How's this money going?
They are. Whether the president actually is debatable.
Well, okay. I mean, I get that.
This is our president who just the other day said, you know, warned that he didn't want Israel to go into Haifa.
Yeah, well.
Well, that happens to be a city in Israel.
Yeah, I hope I never get that job because I'd be stumbling on these foreign places too. But, what I'm saying, I hope we're asking, how do all these people fit in? I mean, how exactly is Iran getting stuff to the Houthis? I mean, how the hell do you, I mean, we got satellites everywhere. Everybody sees all this stuff. There's ships going by there every day. If all of a sudden you see some big supply ship from North Korea pull up to a port in Houthi, you'd think we'd know about it, or at least somebody would. I'd love to see a big choreography of who's who.
Mike talked about that yesterday.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of satellite surveillance, et cetera. But, you know, also keep in mind that, you know, black markets have been operating, you know, since the beginning of time, basically. And so, you know, people are smuggling things all over the world. It's going on, whether it's... you know, whether it's human trafficking into the United States, whether it is drug trafficking, whether it, you know, whatever it is, it's, you know, this is not new.
I understand that. The motivations, I mean, hell, you brought up Henry IV the other day. Motivations, Shakespeare and the Greek writers, human emotion hasn't changed since we became human, whatever the hell that was. But and you are too, I mean, you're the one. I'm quoting you when I do this stuff. And here you are arguing.
I know.
But I mean,
that'll walk you into trouble every time.
I mean, the idea of having all this crap coming up from Mexico when these bleeps have submarines and, you know, really fast speedboats and, by the way, a border, all that stuff. The logistics in the midst of all that mayhem, can they do a bunch of crap? The answer is yes. But in a world of satellites, how somehow or another stuff gets from North Korea to Yemen to Iran to God knows all these places to Gaza without anybody knowing about it or claiming they don't know about it, and with none of them having any money, any or in the SWIFT system or can't write a check or anything like that. Kevin, that's got to be amazingly complicated and pretty easy to spot, relatively. We're not talking about moving across the border into Mexico. We're talking about North Korea to Yemen, for God's sake.
Well, yes and no, but here's part of your question, Tom, and I don't know the answer to this, so I'm just sort of speculating here, so bear with me. But if you are, what if you smuggle the parts, not the missiles? Because what do we already know? What do we know, you know, that Hamas has in Gaza? They've gone down in the tunnel systems. They have incredibly sophisticated tunnel systems there.
Oh yeah,
and I agree. They run under everything. So if you get the parts into the in there, then you know assembly, taking care of all that stuff surreptitiously is pretty easy, relatively easy.
But how, I guess, like you're right. I mean, that's why I'd want to know how complex it is. Now, what I'm saying, I'm trying to be not a simpleton here. It's hard for me to imagine. I don't know how many ports they even have in North Korea, for God's sake. If all of a sudden somebody pops out with a cargo ship and it percolates all the way to Gaza, who doesn't even have a port, or percolates all the way to Yemen, I assume they have a port, and it just heads over there, I guess we could assume it's there for some naughtiness, right? But now, you're right, if the parts somehow go through China, somehow go through oil barrels through South Korea and some other place, and then they go to some other place in Africa and overland to Yemen, yeah, you can get them there. I mean, human beings are very creative, but I'd want to at least know it's that much trouble for them, and they're not just starting out with a boat and going from one place to the other loaded with weapons when both places are on our radar.
Okay, but I'll go back to the tunnel system. How much trouble is that for them?
Well, but I mean, Gaza doesn't even have a port. How do you get them to the tunnels? That's my point.
Yeah, but, you know, my point is, you know, there isn't any such thing as too much trouble. Not when you're a zealot.
Well, I understand that, but, well, I don't, I guess I'm not that much, well, I guess I am a zealot for the market and for people's cash. But to me, North Korea to a tunnel in Gaza, when there's no railroad, there's a blockade on the road, and by the way, there's no port. You and I could be zealots, but boy, we got to be pretty imaginative to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not arguing with you, but they do it.
Matter of fact, I can't even imagine how they're doing it. Can you? Unless it's
no, I don't. And it'd be fun to get an expert on there because you know the minute we start speculating, that's all I'm doing is just wild ass guesses.
Well, you know what? In the what the hell was the name of the book? Not Forsyth. Dogs of War. They went and got the guns, and they bought an old freighter, and that's why I love reading those kinds of books, like The Day of the Jackal and those kinds of things, because it's not, you know how it ends, okay? They didn't assassinate de Gaulle in The Day of the Jackal, but then you start reading all the different stuff, and you realize what the logistics of it really is. You know, and then you look about Lee Harvey Oswald and stuff and say, wait a minute, did that guy do all that? But anyway, what they did is they got all these guns and they got them someplace, bought some old freighter that had a history of using up a lot of oil, right? sounds like one of my old cars. So they got these barrels of oil that were allegedly to lubricate the engine, got some half-assed cargo, and put the guns in these really high-tech plastic bags where the oil couldn't get in and sunk them in all the oil barrels. But yeah, if you have months to plan and figure this out, but I didn't realize guys didn't even have a port. So the thing can't even pull up there. I mean, and there's no train going in there, is there? I don't think. I'm just saying it's a logistics problem that if somebody smart enough to do that should probably be making a legitimate living. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's always, you know, said that you know I used to do some speaking to youth groups, and you know when I actually had young kids would say, you know, well, you know, the people with the money in my neighborhood are the ones who sell a lot of drugs. And I always tell them, if you're smart enough to run a drug business, you're smart enough to run a legitimate business, and you'll have far less chance of getting shot or going to jail.
Yeah, you might not make as much money.
And you may not, but you also may not get shot. So, but that's a digression. But it is, look, yeah, these are people who could very well thrive in a legitimate business. That's part of the shame of the situation, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
Don't you think is that, that all of this brain power is being directed to something, that is. You know, it's absolutely not helping anybody in the world, but it's just fueled by hatred.
SP Futures down 10, NASDAQ down 64. Kevin, whatever it is, we're talking the world down because these things are not, they're sure not in panic mode. Gold is down now, and so I think is oil. So I guess if we'd have sold all this stuff about 3 a.m, we'd be Yes, yes, but we didn't. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now.
Well, no picks, Stocks and Jacks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas on the board. Greg, just as we talked yesterday about information flying all over the place, what do you think the flying of information is like this morning, for God's sake? We had, well, I think, I want to check this after we do traffic weather sports. Did it touch 85, Greg? Now it's down 80 cents, 81.93. So it was up 3%. Now it's down 1%. So kick it up 4% from here, and you got to be close to 30, 85 bucks. It's crazy morning, and we had the I saw futures down 25 at least, and not only down 8. So I mean, stuff's happening here. We'll try and interpret the news as it's coming. Over in Europe, DAX down 132.7%, FTSE down 53.7%, CAC around down 28, only 0.4%. So whether those guys are going to start rallying here like we are, or at least be down less, could very well be. However, Asia is closed now. So whatever news is coming out of there, whether Israeli says this is done or something. Nikkei is down 1,000 points. It's almost 3%. 37,068. Hang Seng is down 161. That's a full 1%. 16,224. Shanghai only down 8. That's 0.3%. So those guys are closed. They can't come back. But it looks like whatever is going on, the news has turned not as negative, shall we say. Bonds are actually down 5 basis points, 4.60. Bund down 2 basis points, 2.46. Japan down 2 as well, 0.85. Oil, like I said, was up 3%. Now it's down 1%. It's 82.02. Brent down 77 cents, 86.34. Natural gas down a penny, 1.74. RBOB down 2 cents, 2.68. We've got gold, which spiked earlier as well. It's now down 8.90, 23.89. Silver down 13 cents, 28.25. So, any truth to the rumor, Greg? You sold gold, sold oil, and bought Spoo at 2:30.
I was sleeping. I felt great.
Yeah, but now, just think how much better you could. You take a nap now after you took your profits. Just saying. Anyway, crypto, Bitcoin up 1,500, 64,950. We've got. Let's see what the dollar's doing. Unchanged, 106.5 on the euro, and against the pound, it is actually unchanged, 1.24. Yesterday, as a review, we were down again, most of the market, but not very much. Dow was up 22, NASDAQ down 11, NASDAQ down 81, so it's kind of a slower down day yesterday, but still a down day. Today, who knows? We'll to be determined. Greg, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports, Hawks. Season finally open, thank God.
Morning, everyone. 6:34 here in Chicago. 43 degrees, mostly sunny. High of 57 for today. Phoenix, 67 right now, mostly sunny and a high of 94. Very warm the entire day. Traffic, inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 16 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook, 34 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 35 minutes. The Ryan from 95th is 17 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan is 27 minutes. Sports, Bulls play at Miami tonight. That's at 6 p.m. Baseball, Cubs were postponed. Diamondbacks lose 0-5 at San Francisco. And Hawks lost in overtime. That was 4-5 to the Kings.
So they finished the season with a 6-game losing streak.
Whoops.
Yeah. Kevin, I know you're probably not as sort of intrigued by this, but I mean, I've obviously, you know better than most that every sport is really sort of different when it comes to playoffs and stuff. And in general, you know, unless something really bad happens in football and like four of their best guys, a crummy team's not going to beat a good team necessarily in a playoff game. But in basketball, this, in the NBA, I'm intrigued by these play-in rounds. Because sometimes you do have teams that lose.
The 9-10 is a single elimination, and the 7-8 is a double elimination.
Right. Well, the person who wins the first one of the 7-8, you win that game, you play the number 2 seed. And the other guys play off essentially for the right to play the number 1 seed.
Yeah, for the right to get their brains beat in.
Yeah. But the way it is, some teams that are in the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th spots, and maybe I don't include the Bulls, even though their defense has gotten a hell of a lot better, some teams are there for reasons. I mean, the only reason Philadelphia is in the 7th spot or wherever they are is because Embiid got hurt. You know, the guy's MVP. He could be, well, he's easily one of the top 5 most dominant players in the game. And he didn't play the last, what, 40 games, Kevin? So, but now all of a sudden he's back. Now there's rumor that he's back too soon, or that he's okay, whichever you believe there, who knows. Maybe only a gambler knows. But if he's back 100%, which I fade, I give them every bit as... they got to be even money against the Knicks, aren't they?
I would think so, yeah.
So, I mean, it is sort of different. I mean, same thing happened to Miami last year. Didn't they get... Was it Jimmy Buckets they got back or somebody? And they went to the finals out of the play-in group.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jimmy Buckets is not playing tonight. I'm talking about Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
He's got
I mean, the thing is, in basketball, one player can make that big a difference.
Yeah.
In football, one player cannot unless it's the quarterback.
Right. If you go from a superstar quarterback to some schlump on the bench just in case the other guy gets hurt, there are teams where the secondary guy is pretty good. You know, he's not as good as the first guy, or he'd be the first guy, but we're not talking Bob Greasy and Earl Morrill on most teams, right?
Yeah, I mean, what does any team hope for out of their backup quarterback? Is that if he has to play a few games during the season, you're not totally screwed. It's not guaranteed losses. That's what you hope to get out of your backup quarterback. Maybe you have a young guy who's waiting in the wings and he's going to be pretty good if you have a serious injury, but most of the time that isn't it. So you know that's your Tyson Bagent for the Bears. Where he could, you know, he could go out there and he might win a game that wouldn't be necessarily because of him, but he won't screw it up. That's football. Other than that, there's probably, I mean, there might be some guys that make a huge difference, a really good pass rusher or somebody like that, but for the most part, the only guy that can really affect the game that dramatically to just completely change it is the quarterback.
Well, there are people that are good enough. Who's the old tackle? Was it on Philly or somebody that he played, there's 17 games now, he played 12 games, and the games he was in there, they like won almost every game, and the games he wasn't, either 1-5 or something. I mean, which, you know, again, they don't attribute necessarily to him, but, you know, there are key guys, you know, but it's also, Kevin, you know, people, you know, we always talk about history. Depends on your team. Now, the Bears, for instance, when they had the team of the 80s that won the Super Bowl, that arguably is probably the best team that has ever played in terms of how much they swept through the playoffs and, you know, the lost one game all year. They had the youngest team in football at the time, easily the best team in football, offense and defense. Defense was spectacular and the offense was almost as good. The only weakness they had was a fragile quarterback. Yet, when the Dolphins had a team just about as good in the 70s, what they did go 17, was it 17-0? They were strong everywhere as well, and Bob Greasy was a little fragile. So the owner, and with Don Shula as the coach, they went out and essentially paid starter money to put somebody behind Bob Greasy and said, look, the only thing that can go wrong here, this guy could go down. And they went out and paid starter money, basically, for Earl Morrill. He'd been a starter everywhere else, right? And he ended up playing, what, 13 games that year or something?
And Morrill had done that with Unitas as well.
Yeah.
The difference being, in those days, starter money wasn't
as
it would be today.
The idea of Halas,
and there were, and they didn't have salary caps and things like that. So yeah, but it was, you're right in the analysis. That was, you know, that was addressing the, that was basically, it was good risk assessment.
But I mean, but the Halases, you know, the family going all the way back to George, was never going to pay anybody big money to sit on the bench. That's just not in their DNA. I think the guy rolled. I don't know if he was still alive. Was he still alive in 85? If he wasn't, he rolled over in his grave when he saw somebody pay that for somebody who was supposed to sit on the bench. Because look at the string of guys they had behind McMahon. They were never. Well, the only guy that was decent was Doug Flutie, and all he did was run him out of town because McMahon didn't like him, right?
Well, he wasn't that good.
No, but he was at least, he was better than the other schlumps they had back there. Well, they had the guy from Ohio State, wasn't too bad. You know,
Tom. They had Tom Sack. They had,
yeah,
Fuller. You know, Fuller was a first round draft pick. Not for the Bears, but you know,
yeah,
he had some talent. He didn't.
But anyway,
Fuller's big problem was he had an incredible knack, or you know how some quarterbacks with one or two steps in the pocket, they can evade the rush.
Yeah.
You know, they just feel the pressure coming and they take the one right step that avoids the hit. Well, Fuller was the opposite. Fuller with one step would step right into the teeth of it.
Without a doubt, yeah. But there aren't many guys that are that talented. Well, especially if you're small. I mean, if you're Joe Theismann or if you're Drew Brees, that's a talent you have to have because you can't see over the guy. I mean, those guys, the footwork on those two guys.
Theismann was smallish as quarterbacks go, especially quarterbacks in that era, but wasn't he like 6'1"?
No. I played basketball. I mean, 6 foot maybe. But he had the most chiseled. He looked like Kirk Douglas, for God's sake, back before people did weights. I played basketball against him when I was a freshman. I never saw a guy, Kevin, in all the years I played ball, I never saw a guy as quick on his first few steps as that dude. His feet, you couldn't even see him. I mean, he was an amazing athlete. In basketball, he'd sit there and all of a sudden he's around somebody, he didn't even know he moved. And he was like that in the pocket. It's like a guy who plays basketball at like 5'10", or like pro basketball. The athleticism in somebody like that has to be, I mean, they're at a tip top of a 5'10 gene pool. I mean, without a doubt. But anyway. But you know,
yeah, and Pro Football Reference lists Theismann at 6 foot, so that's probably as tall as he could have possibly been.
Yeah.
When I'm now looking at Doug Flutie with the Bears, where's his quarterback? He was a 50% passer 1 year. Well, that was a small sample. And actually, you know what? He never played much for them.
No.
But he played a total of 5 games for them. So it's hard to say he was pretty good. You know, he wasn't.
Well,
he didn't do anything for them.
No, he was no Drew Brees. I mean, he didn't have anywhere near the... Anyway, so the interesting part of... We just talked about people getting arms from North Korea to Gaza. We talked about somebody figuring out how much you want to pay a backup quarterback. And you know what, Kevin? It's all the same subject. It's assessing what you have, what you have to do. Can you do it? How do you do it? It's all what you're teaching. Supply chain.
It's not like I haven't put together a project management course in the last day with a heavy dose of risk assessment in it.
Yes, it's all the same stuff, and it's one of the. You should have. I don't know if you want to tell people to read about war books. There's a chapter or two in The Dogs of War that I don't think people need to read the whole book. There's a chapter or two of how they put all the arms together and all the different people they order different parts from and how they get it all to the same place in this African country they're trying to take over. It should be absolute number one reading, not number one, but somewhere in the top 10 reading for a class like yours. It's absolute. Or when the guy is putting the gun and everything together to go kill De Gaulle, how many different suppliers he had to go to get this piece, that piece. And how we put it all together. It's exactly what you teach.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, and you have to have reliable suppliers. and get you to the, you know, and good logistics to get everything in the right place at the right time. Yeah, it's all, the best part of the equation.
The best character, if I talk about going off the reservation, the best character is the guy who made the gun for the dude in Day of the Jackal, for the Jackal. Because the guy wanted to be able to get into where De Gaulle was. It looked like he was a vagrant with only one leg. So the gun was in the crutch. So he gave the guy the specs, and he went to some incredible gun maker. So the cushion on the top of the crutch was the cushion for the gun you put on your shoulder. And all the different parts of the gun were in the tubes of the metal or the aluminum for the crutch. The bullets in this spot, something else in this spot, something else in that spot. And he went out and got bullets. There were exploding bullets from somebody. And the guy who put the gun together for him said it. He knew he was an assassin, right? He goes, it's terrific to do business with a true professional who paid cash. He knows the dude was an assassin. He was happy to do business with him because he paid cash or whatever.
Look, your ability to collect, you know, the terms, you know, you don't want to deal with this net 30 crap.
Well, but the first thing you think if you're dealing with an assassin, the first guy the guy's going to shoot is you, so you can never identify the guy. But he didn't. You're a nice guy. He only went after De Gaulle.
Yeah, you're a very nice guy.
He was a nice guy. But just the way the gun was put together, and if you ever watch the movie, you look at the gun, it's absolutely unbelievable. And then he goes out to target shoot, and he gets his big watermelon, puts it on a cantaloupe or whatever, and puts it on his, you know, rope thing and hangs it from a tree. So he takes a shot and he misses where he's shooting by like an inch and a half. Then he misses the same side an inch and a half, and he goes, gets out this little tiny screwdriver and adjusts the sight, just maybe two turns of the screw. The next one he hits right the bullseye, and he goes, all right, this thing's ready. And puts one of these exploding bullets in there. Instead of just going into the melon, the whole melon just explodes. And that was supposed to be somebody's head.
That was supposed to be somebody's head. See, and so that stresses the importance of having a good calibration program for your tools.
Yeah, exactly right. So what do you think, as we have this news, even it's almost a news blackout, because Israel, from what I can see, hasn't commented yet. What does this do to the market today? Is it back and forth, not anyone want to be involved, or just hanging out, or what do you think here?
The last person you should be asking about that, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do I really think this is going to be back and forth? I don't, you know, but there's two factors in here. One is what's really productive, and there would be nothing productive about Iran answering. Or if they do, maybe they'll do it, you know, you know, somebody like Hezbollah out of the north or something like that. That's probably what they'll do. They'll probably have a, you know, do some kind of proxy response. But it's not going to be severe. The thing is, you know, it's not now that, you know, anything's been proven other than Iran, you can try and attack, you're not getting through. Israel can try and attack, they're getting through. And so, you know, we'll show you what we can do. Now, you know, you want to back off. But the Iranians are going to want to figure out how to save face. That's going to be their big thing now. You know, did they just get humiliated by, you know, A, having one fail, and then B, having the Israelis say, watch, we're coming into your turf, and you can't do a damn thing about it. And so are they going to have to do something face-saving? That's where the danger lies.
Do you think the Israelis went over the other countries, or they went around?
I have no idea.
I mean, that to me is kind of a I wouldn't say it's a deal breaker, but you know, I think it would be pretty hard. I guess, well, we could go around, but I mean, if you couldn't go around, it'd be pretty tough to you know, for France to fight with Russia without having Germany involved. If you're lobbing everything over Germany. I mean, you know, if you don't have a common border with somebody or something, or allies in the middle, but I can't imagine that Saudi lets the Israelis go over Saudi to get to Iran. Do you? I mean, they don't like Israel or either one of them. Maybe they do. I mean, maybe Jordan gave them the go-ahead. I don't know. But like I said the other day, I actually looked at it. It's 1,300 miles is the closest point between the two countries. over somebody else. It's either Turkey or it's Syria or it's Jordan or it's Saudi, right? Or maybe you can go over Iraq. I mean, they're all kind of tied together over there, but the one that they Israel has no common border at all with Iran. So somebody must be giving them the go-ahead, or they have the ability to go around, which they probably do. If you start going around with a drone, can drones go 2,000 miles? I mean, maybe they can. There's a million questions in this, aren't
there? Oh, yeah. I mean, no, drones have... You can do a lot with drones. Not every drone is very little. You know, some of them are like small aircraft.
Well, that's true. But, I mean, can you get there any kind of a warhead? I don't know. Now, the question is, I mean, the other question about the Iranian thing last week, and I'm kind of quoting the general was on last week because he knows a hell of a lot more about it than me. He says there's something else going on here. This thing was such a non-success. Now, one of the questions, Kevin, if you and I were sitting in the war room in Washington, okay, they lobbed 300 of these things. They didn't get anywhere. But now we shut down 90, according to newspapers. Everybody else shut down sort of the rest. Some of them apparently didn't even make it, must have landed somewhere. What if they do it five more times? Are we out of bullets? What percentage of Jordan and Ara and the Brits anti-aircraft stuff or the Israel's Iron Dome, what percentage did this useless attack take? Is it 1%? Well, then we're fine. Is it 20%? If they do it two more times, we're down to not much. You know, there's a million. God, are there enough questions here, Kevin?
Yeah, what's that, Roseanne Adana? You sure ask a lot of questions for someone from New Jersey.
At least we're not from New Jersey.
At least we're not from New Jersey, yeah.
So the Cubs get rained out. Now they're playing they kick you out doubleheader tomorrow, which, I tell you what, it's a good thing I don't have season tickets anymore because I'd be so pissed off. Plus, even if you have a skybox, you got to leave and come back.
They'll leave and come back, yeah, day and night.
It's
if I were running the team, I would say suite holders don't have to leave and come back unless they only bought one game.
Bought both games.
Yeah, you can rent them out one.
That's true.
Time so.
Now the Sox played a legitimate doubleheader. Was it yesterday or the day before?
Yeah, well, hey, if only 23 people are going to show up anyway, you might as well just play them both and get it out of the way.
I drove by there maybe like 11:45, 12. They had the lights on. It was still kind of cloudy. And I didn't see anybody in the upper deck. I didn't see anybody getting off at 35th Street.
It would be like the White Sox, though, where you literally only have like 100 people there. And it would be very much like the White Sox to say people with upper deck tickets have to use them; they can't move down.
Do you remember? Do you think most of the listeners could ever even imagine that the Cub games at the upper deck was only open during the week?
to embellish that on the White Sox, though, and you know how fan unfriendly they have been in the past. I haven't been to a Sox game in quite a while, to be honest with you. So I couldn't comment on the current regime or the current people doing responsible for game day operations. But back when I lived in Milwaukee, and right after they opened up the stadium there, which has the retractable dome, I had some friends up from Chicago and one of whom was a big Sox fan, and they started to close the roof because there was rain coming, and so they were closing the roof during the game. And Mark was interested in seeing it, so we kind of started to walk down to the box seats, so that he could get a good look at it. And an usher started walking to him, and he was like, "Oh God, this guy's going to chase us away." And he was totally blown away that the usher looked at him and said, "Do you want to see? Come on down here."
Some places
understand customer service.
Well, I talk about a wacky deal. We were out in Vegas, and they had these fights outside. It was so long ago. Remember the Wide World of Sports? Saturday, they'd have the fights in the afternoon. So my buddy JD, you know him, he said, "Oh, come on, we got to go to the fights." So we go. Of course, with him, you got to show up like early to see the earliest fight. You know, like if you go to a Notre Dame game and are up by 50 and it's pouring rain, you got to stay till the end. I mean, I'd dark night sky. But so we go for the first fight. It's hotter than hinges of hell out in Caesars, where the big stores are now. They put this thing out in the parking lot. Well, they had a big, you know, I'll say piece of canvas over the ring. So those guys were in the shade, everybody else in the sun. You know, so we're sitting there, and of course we're the only people there are a group in front of us and a group behind us, and we're sitting there. Well, I just gotten into some camera stuff. I used to like take pictures, but I haven't done it in ages. So I'm thinking, okay, the light is all different down in the ring than it is here. I got to get some kind of a reading. If anybody knows anything about photography, it's not where you're shooting from; it's where you're shooting to, right? So I walk down there and I say to the guy, look, would you mind, since between fights, if I kind of stuck my camera underneath the canvas to get some kind of a light reading so I know where to put my camera from back in my seat? And the guy goes, you see this thing here between the really good seats and the next almost pretty good seats? He goes, why don't you come down here and just kneel down and do it here? I'm not going to kick you out. Oh, really? So I ended up down like really, really close. But the first fight, Kevin, was absolutely spectacular. They got these two guys that are both like 6'2", burly dudes. I mean, you wouldn't want to mess with either one of them, right? And they're like whacking each other in this three round fight. You know, whack the other guy, whack. And it turns out one guy just won the tough man competition in like Dubuque or someplace. One guy had won something else. Well, the people around us are the families of these guys. You know, and the girlfriend and the mother were so pissed off at the guy, because evidently he took 2 days off work to come out to do the fight, and where he was working said, that's not a legitimate excuse, you're fired. You're not going to be a boxer, you idiot. So he was fired out there, and then he lost. Anyway, you hear a lot of stuff for the stands, but it was what's his name, your buddy Fists of Stone, what's his name,
Roberto Duran.
Yeah, when he was trying to work his way up from lightweight to middleweight, and he had those fights. I mean, for those guys to put on 15 pounds and move up a class is a big deal. Because he walked by me, he's a little dude. I mean, you wouldn't want to fight him, but I mean, he came up to my chest. He's a little guy, and he was going to go play, you know, fight somebody 3 inches taller. I mean, that's tough to do. Anyway, that's my story. I got to film the fight from way down on a seat that I didn't buy. So there.
There you go.
Yeah, so the future is, we're going to talk a lot more with Carl on what's going on with the labor and stuff. We had a gentleman on this week who was talking about how good the economy is because the labor stuff was up. What are you seeing there, Kevin? We talked a little bit on, was Wednesday or yesterday, the difference between one view of median income. Median income for full-time people is into the 50s now, okay? The median income for everybody is still under 40, although it is inching up. It was 36 earlier in the year, now it's like 39. So there's about a $14,000 or $15,000 gap between everybody and the people that actually get to work 40 hours, Kevin. And I think you and Carl have been saying the people actually working 40 hours has been dropping, and that's one of the problems, or one of the biggest problems right now that is kind of skewing the numbers a little.
Yeah, I think, there's a lot of places. First of all, you can go look at the Warren's lists, and you will find that there are a lot of layoffs happening, a lot of layoffs planned. So that's up, in my opinion, it's up somewhat. I don't have the statistical data. I just, it's something that I watch because it tells me a little bit what to expect in terms of enrollment, because when people get laid off, they come back to school looking for more skills. But that activity seems to be up, but I'm not talking to a lot of people who've been laid off, but I am talking to a lot of people who have their hours cut, and people who are looking for, looking at side hustles.
What, if you could make a, like the people in your class, some people are, your classes, some people are working someplace and figure out either through communication with their boss or whatever the ownership, that if they get a little more skill set behind them, there might be a promotion in their future. There's that group you have. There's people that probably are there that are actually haven't worked yet, although I don't think there's too many of those. Hopefully you're not getting too many that just got basically their ass tossed, and now they're looking for a skill set so they can find a job. Is that number increasing or decreasing?
That's not yet. Not yet, but we've seen it in the past, so that could be part of it. That could become a factor. We will see. But in the meantime, yeah, it is people just trying to skill up. And really, in many cases, it's not even looking for the promotion. It's saying, what makes me more valuable than the next guy, so they know, so I'm not the guy who gets laid off.
Well, yeah.
And that gets into, you know, people who can implement things. You know, people who you can pull out of a regular job and put them on a team of people who has to implement something new, those are really valuable people. So, you know, to me, my mission there is a lot of project work, a lot of hands-on stuff, a lot of chance to actually not just learn some skills and get some certifications, but to put them into action.
Yeah, we got a dash, Kevin. The guy we talked about who tried to throw the games, but through his part of the betting, the guy from Toronto, banned for life, eh? You see that?
I didn't see that. I've been kind of under the radar for a couple of days, so tell me what happened.
Yeah, he's banned for forever, NBA.
So they investigated, and they are certain it happened, and it wasn't just an innocent little take myself out of the game.
Oh, no, they
That's
had...
That's interesting.
The first time was interesting. The second time, the gamblers were all over it. And then he took himself out, in the first quarter or something?
Yeah.
And I don't think he did the betting, though. He must have owed somebody. I mean, I don't know about
that.
He
must have owed somebody. So, you know, you can say, well, was it worth it? And the was it worth it would be, well, you know, you just lost a lot of career money playing professional basketball. But on the other hand, he may have saved his life. So.
Well, I wonder if they pick him up in Europe. We'll see. Anyway, to be determined. SP Futures down 7, NASDAQ Futures down 50. Kevin, have a nice weekend. Talk to you early next week. Be right back with Carl Denninger.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Low North Bay Stocks and Jocks, time out. Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures down 7, NASDAQ Futures down 48. Greg and Carl, because Greg is our expert now on the VIX. VIX is up 79 cents, though, 18.79, the highest it's been since last October. So that's not coming down today at all. Carl, what do you make of all this stuff happening last night? These big spikes up, and then somebody was there to sell them, and I still can't find any news on what anybody hit, if anybody got killed or anything. Can you? I'm looking all over the place.
Well, the rumor mill, which, you know, is that's what it was to start with, and what apparently kicked off the festivities, was that Israel was targeting Iran's nuclear fuel enrichment sites.
Okay. Well, I heard an airport earlier, so these rumors were all over the place.
Well, that was the thing that I saw come across, you know, some of the so-called news media. And the problem with doing that, I mean, you know, Israel is a sovereign country, they can do whatever the blankety blank they want, but the problem with doing that is that Iran, in that last attack, you know, the drones were, I mean, it was kind of an interesting, I mean, how you think about, let's just kind of put a little backdrop on this, Chief. Think about this. If you're going to blast somebody, do you tell them when you're going to do it, like, in advance?
No, that was a little strange.
Well, you got to wonder if the whole thing was a show, right? I mean, that's the, you know, that's what it brought to mind for me. But the...
Did you listen to, I know I brought the guy up, and I'm an idiot for not remembering his name. The African-American retired general was on last weekend. The guy was, he was stone cold brilliant. I thought he's like, something's got to be more to this. They told everybody they're coming. The stuff was flying across everybody else's country. They kind of sniffed out everybody's defenses, yet nothing got there. He goes, I almost wonder if this is some kind of a big diversion or was done for a totally different reason. Or so. He goes, this seems
well,
so weird.
Well, that's right. The whole thing didn't make any sense. Okay, the original thing. But I think the reason you got that sell-off last night was that if, in fact, Israel had gone after Iran's nuclear enrichment sites.
They did that once before, like a decade. Was it 20 years?
They did, and Iran got smart and put them all underground. Underground. Okay, so it's like, next time conventional weapons are not going to do anything. The problem with doing that is that Israel has a nuclear complex at Dimona, and if you hit that and you manage to really hit it, you know, not harassment level stuff, but you nail it with something substantial, you're going to create an active denial zone within the state of Israel for 10,000 years.
Really? Okay.
It's the same, you know, people talk about the horrible thing if we have a nuclear exchange, anywhere in the world, right? You know, in America, wherever. And the reality of setting off nuclear weapons is that, yes, they create some radionuclides, things that are dangerous. That radiation causes cancer, it kills you outright from radiation poisoning, things like this. But the real problem isn't there. The real problem, because that stuff, the amount of it that gets generated is not very much. If you set one off at the ground level, then you suck up a bunch of dust and, you know, debris, and mix that in with the stuff, which does not make it better, right? It makes it considerably worse. But you don't create any more of it, and all that you create is whatever, you know, however much fissile material is in that bomb. So, and that's all there is. The problem with hitting a power reactor or any kind of nuclear facility is that since Carter was president, when he banned reprocessing, all of the old spent fuel, instead of being reprocessed into new fuel pins and put back in a reactor and burned up, when you run a reactor, you create a bunch of what are called actinide series elements. That's just where they are in the periodic table. They don't naturally occur. They're very heavy, and they have very long half-life times. And the rule is...
Way more than like the bomb that were off in Hiroshima. If we'd have put some of that stuff in there, you still couldn't live there, right?
Well, Hiroshima, Hiroshima and Nagasaki were nuclear explosions, okay? But there wasn't any... all you got when you set off a nuclear weapon in terms of these things is the byproduct of the actual fission that takes place in the bomb. There's not that much stuff in there, right? I mean, there's obviously enough to make a really big boom, but there just isn't that much made in that instant in time. When you run a power reactor, you're creating this stuff over the space of years or decades. And some of it, the stuff in the actinide series, has extremely long half-lives, thousands of years in many cases. So you're talking about something that cannot be allowed to get into the environment for 10,000 years or 100,000 years because it's a hard radiation emitter. It'll kill you. And so you have to do something with that. Well, when we originally designed our nuclear power program, which was dual use to make bombs, the intent was to reprocess the spent fuel, which has this nasty stuff in it. The safest place for that stuff to go is inside a working power reactor, because there's already all kinds of really, you can't stick your head in a working power reactor, you'll be dead. So since we already have to deal with the fact that has to be isolated from humanity, and that's just an inherent part of using nuclear fission, then the best place to put high-level radioactive waste is in a power reactor. And if you put it in there, it gets burned up. It gets turned into, through neutron bombardment, it gets turned into lighter elements that have a shorter half-life. And so if you do this enough times and you cycle it back through, eventually you end up with stuff that's dangerous for, you know, like 200 years. Okay, well, we can probably deal with isolating things for a couple hundred years. We probably can't deal with things isolating things for...
In the original, before Carter did this...
Yeah.
And I remember this from physics class in high school and even people talking about it in college. I did the space tech and society class for whatever reason. But how did they ever plan on getting it from Zion to the breeder in Kentucky? It was going to be by rail, or how the hell are we going to get it?
Yeah, mostly by rail. So there's when you first take the fuel pins out of a running reactor, you can't allow them into the atmosphere. They have to be water cooled the entire time. And so the design of the system is such that when you open the top up, it's underwater, and the entire transit is done by a robot, a machine, that pulls the pins out. They never come out into the atmosphere, and they're transferred into the spent fuel cooling pool. And they have to sit there for a while to cool off because they're producing enough heat in their decay that if you take them out into the atmosphere, they'll literally catch on fire. Okay, which is really bad because then all that stuff goes in the environment, of course. So you have to let them cool down for a while, and that takes a year or two. And that's the reason that all those spent fuel pools were originally built, was that there has to be a holding period where they can't be out in the environment.
But how the hell do you get them in a railroad car?
Well, after a while, they're cool enough that air cooling or cask being cooled passively in a cask, which is basically just a lead-lined container that they are in contact with, and the heat can be conducted to the outside of the container, they're cool enough that you can do that without them melting and catching on fire. All right, so after a year or two, you could do that. And so you put them in metal casks at that point. They're made out of lead. They're very heavy. Of course, that means they have to be moved by rail because you can't put that in a truck. Never mind the hazard factors associated with it. And you take it to the reprocessing plant, and in the reprocessing plant...
Is it going to go right by your house on the way down there?
Well, very well might, but the thing is, those casks are about the closest thing we have to a impenetrable container.
Okay.
You could set off a bunch of dynamite next to them, and they'd laugh at it. They really are, they really are quite safe to move. But nothing's perfect, right?
Right.
I mean, somebody if you got hit with a missile by a warring party, yeah, that'd be really bad because this stuff would be sprayed all over.
Are you old enough to remember the? You'd see that, all these. My brother actually worked for a tank company, so I know more about this than maybe I should, because Pullman didn't do tank cars, so I didn't learn anything there. But every once in a while, when I was a kid, you'd see these tanks go by, and they were real small. And they looked like they were heavy as all get out, and yet they were tiny. Those were the tanks that moved the tetraethyl lead that used to go in the gasoline.
Right.
Isn't that like the most poisonous thing on Earth or something? That stuff.
Well, it's the same. Yeah, it's the same sort of thing. All right. I mean, you don't want this crap in the environment. It's really bad if it happens. So, that was the original design. The problem is what Carter did with his ban was essentially shut that industry down.
But that was in the 70s. I mean,
I know, but Chief, this is the lesson. This is the reason that so many of the things that go on in our country are so corrupt and so damaging both to our economy and to everything else. And that nobody wants to have a conversation about, nobody wants to go there. Nobody wants, for example, what's now going on at Biden just this morning on the news was announced that he has decided that despite the fact that Congress has designated certain parts of Alaska as suitable for energy production, right? This is a democratic process that went through Congress, passed by both the House and the Senate, signed by the president at the time. He has now decided that's not going to happen. He doesn't have the power to do this.
Right? He does if he does it, no, he challenges him.
Well, you know what? Okay, how are you going to challenge him when you've got a, on policy matters where there is no distinction between, you can't vote for somebody who's going to make it different, all right? This is a very serious issue. Carter essentially put us, by doing this, which he did not have the authority to do under the Constitution, there was a set of policies and a set of procedures put in place by Congress for the development of nuclear energy. Now, you can disagree with how we got there. Policy disagreements are fine. Same thing just happened with Mayorkas. They just threw this impeachment out at the Senate. Okay? The impeachment was not about a policy disagreement. That's Chuck Schumer's BS. And the entire, you know, the reality of it is that the reason Mayorkas was impeached, and it's directly in the article, it's what the articles actually state. It's not a, you know, it's not my making stuff up here or what I think it was. It's what the articles actually state, is that he unilaterally decided that the body of law in the Immigration and Nationality Act, in the INA, does not apply because he doesn't want it to, and because Joe Biden doesn't want it to. In other words, the law passed by Congress all of a sudden doesn't apply because one guy refuses to enforce it.
But Carl, we talk about various kinds, even when you're not on, because I, believe it or not, even though I'd like to push back on you just to get more good knowledge out of you, where in your 24-hour day do you not see it?
Everywhere, but that's...
But it's... I'm not... That is not my idea of an excuse, by the way. But I'm saying we've got gazillion laws, gazillion policy. I mean, I go back to, as you know, one of my biggest things is you start seeing this inflation right now, and these guys are trying to fight it. And one of the things that I've been talking about since long before I got on this show is when you start having concentration issues in your economy, inflation, if it ever came around again, like it did during the 70s and 80s, because of the more concentration we have and less industries, in my opinion, are anywhere near competitive, if you ever got inflation, it would be very, very worse and a hell of a lot stickier. And oh, by the way, what's happening? But now you have, there's nothing we can do about it. It was years ago. How do you have a body of antitrust law and a president like Ronald Reagan that said, well, I don't do antitrust, screw that, for 8 years?
Well, look, I'm not saying this is a new problem.
No, I mean, I'm saying it. Okay. I mean, drive down the Ryan and have guys fly by you and your truck shakes and you're going 70 and they're going 110. And you look around, there's no police, and the speed limit says 55, and you go, what's the point of this law?
Right, what the blankety-blank is going on here.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, here's the issue with this, though, is that the more pervasive this becomes, and laws become simply policy tools, in other words, you know, you violate it, you go to jail.
Right, oh, yeah. Well,
this guy over here violates it, we pat him on the back and give him a medal.
Yeah, well, somehow he didn't do it. But, you know, I talked with John Flanagan, Mr. Attorney, and, of course, I was sitting there with a whole bunch of attorneys and a couple of judges, and I just asked the question. I asked John, but everybody kind of heard me, and I said, you know, the Constitution is this spectacular document, and here I am, you know, at this age. I never dreamed, Carl, I guess because I never looked at it, I never dreamed that if the Supreme Court comes up with this huge decision, whatever it is, and you're always talking about the stuff that applies to the insurance companies. And we had, who else was I talking about? Was it Lou talking about something else? The decisions, they make them. They're these big deals, and all of a sudden, they get ignored. Nowhere in the Constitution is any sort of enforcement power for the Supreme Court, or really any kind of court.
Well, no, the enforcement power of the Constitution rests in the people. The reason that the First and Second Amendment exist is there, and in fact, the Supreme Court does not have, under the Constitution, nowhere in there is the power delegated to the Supreme Court to decide whether or not an act of Congress is constitutional. Now you'd say, well, yeah, go ahead and go look for it. In fact, you can look on the federal court's own website. Okay, so this is an official mouthpiece of the federal judiciary. They admit up front that the Supreme Court invented that power out of whole cloth in Marbury v. Madison.
Well, you're not supposed to have cruel and unusual punishment. So if some state decided they're going to start drawing and quartering people, I think the Supreme Court could say that doesn't match up with the Constitution.
Well, okay. The 14th, prior to the 14th Amendment, the states could do all sorts of stuff that was federally unconstitutional. We passed a constitutional amendment through the process to incorporate the federal constitutional constraints against the states. Prior to the 14th Amendment, that did not exist. Now it does. But we did it through the proper process.
Okay.
All right. And the problem that we have right now and that we've had for the last several decades, and it's everywhere in the economy, it's everywhere within the federal, you know, the federal system in the general sense, and it's in the state systems to a significant degree as well. I mean, you know, go find me a state. Well, you know, as I pointed out, Tennessee has a statute on the books, probably the toughest in the country, that says that if you as a corporation violate the antitrust statutes, your corporate charter is void.
All right, so what do you think would happen if they ever said to Microsoft, your corporate charter is voided in Tennessee? It's never happened, and it's probably never going to. What if they did? How does that even work?
Well, it means that you have no corporate protection doing business in the state.
Okay, but I mean, it's all well and good to say that, but again... There's people there.
If a executive or employee of Microsoft travels into the state and they're selling things there, they've done something wrong, they go to prison personally.
I mean, I this is a true story, Carol. I was on the CBOE board, and you know, and it was a big to do. I don't know what I was involved in, but there was something. Maybe it was just my friends. It was some states' rights issue was coming up. This has to be 1998, somewhere in there, because my last year on the board, and I was get a load of this. I was on chairman of the marketing committee, so I'm in New York for this World Series game, actually, to meet with all these member firm people. And then the next day, I was also on the committee that the CBO was going to possibly buy the Pacific Stock Exchange. So I had to fly from Newark to San Francisco, and thank God I got the last first-class seat. My seat would have been the last row in the middle. It's a 6.5-hour flight. It's long. It's like going to Europe, for God's sake. And so I'm sitting there, and on one hand, you like the idea that there's states' rights, but you also just flew over the entire country in 6 hours. And you look out the right window, and you go, wait a minute. Their marijuana possession is lifetime imprisonment, like it used to be in Texas or something. And then you look out the left side of the plane and you go, well, it's a misdemeanor over there. It's really kind of crazy in a lot of ways to have all these different laws when the country is so close together now with the modern transportation. It's not like, you know, 1810 where somebody from Rhode Island would never see somebody from Carolina. It's not like that anymore. So right. I don't know where I stand. I mean, Tennessee may have these laws, but they're just as guilty as Ronald Reagan. It's right in front of their face. They never enforced one. Right.
Yeah. That's the basic part of the problem is that this deterioration has gone on over a period of time.
Yes.
Okay. It's not something that instantly happened. You can't look at this and say, well, you know, this was just a simple thing that went to, you know, whatever have you, or, you know, whatever. It just doesn't. And that's one of the things that really bothers me about all of this is that if we look at all of the things that are all the terrible stuff that's going on, all the things that have gone wrong, right? I mean, you look in medicine and the entire problem there rests in the fact that you have antitrust violations literally by the hundreds of thousands every single day.
Right.
All right. And then on top of that, you have all of these entities that commit abject, outrageous fraud, and nobody gets arrested for it. I'm going to poke at something that is a hot button social political issue today, and that's in the modern era, and that's this whole trans thing. Telling somebody in a physician's office, in a professional setting, or somebody who knows this, that you can take someone who is a boy and make them a girl, or vice versa. That is an abject lie. It is a fraud. It is and by the way, it creates hundreds of thousands of dollars dependence, permanent dependence on the medical system if that person goes through with that. And the reason it's a fraud is that you can make someone who is a boy look like a girl.
but it is not medically or physically possible to make someone who is a boy function.
No,
like
God,
a girl.
No. Right. Or the other way around.
Or the other way around. But guess what? That's what these people are sold. All right. Nobody says to them, none of this stuff that we're going to do is functional. It's cosmetic.
I'm not so sure what you could possibly do to me to make me have a baby. That ain't happening.
You can't. All right. Which is the whole problem. Right now, you'd think everybody and their brother would know this. And therefore, you know, you can't defraud somebody that knows that you're BSing them. Right. I mean, that's the logic. But the fact of the matter is that you have a bunch of people who really do believe that medical science can do things that they can't do.
Well,
right? And look at what happened you know, during the pandemic.
Oh,
right?
Sure.
All sorts. Yeah. So the thing is, selling this to someone, when you're the expert, if I'm the expert and you come to me and you say, Carl, I want you to write a piece of software that does blah, 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 blah. And I know that at least one of those blahs can't be done. Right? I know this because I'm a professional in the field, and I say, well, yeah, I'll do that, and you give me money, and I write the thing, but in that particular area, it doesn't do what you said you wanted it to do because it can't. I'm supposed to be liable for that. I lied to you. I took your money under false pretense.
Some people get to do that, and some don't.
Well, this kind of thing, you know, this is the basic problem that we have.
Well, they're gonna say you can sue your redress is through the courts.
Well, except that there isn't, and that's.
Well, there's a lot of people who win money back from doctors for malpractice in hospitals.
I understand that, Chief, but there's things you can do to people that can't be compensated for with money.
Right. I mean, if you say you can fix this, and all of a sudden you can't. And if it's not as obvious as putting a hip in wrong or putting the wrong hip in or something, it's not obvious. Plus, by the time they try and fix it two and three times and charge you again, who knows where the mistake was made or if there ever was a mistake.
Well, I mean, you know, we have, there's a basic problem in that we claim certainty and capacity when we don't have it. All right? That is fraud.
Well, sure it is.
If they give you
the numbers and said, by the way, if you fly to Europe and we put this stem cell treatment in your shoulder, it's helped 60 out of 90 people to have a better football season next year in the NFL, but a lot of it has to do with your shoulder and how damaged it is. I guess I can go with that explanation. But if they say, no problem, you're going to be a young Johnny Unitas next year, well, that's a little much.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the very few of these things in that field are honestly and correctly disclosed to people. All right. I mean, we have, how much of this nonsense with green energy goes on? Oh, we have to save the environment. By the way, it won't be any more expensive. Then your power costs double.
Yeah.
All right. Well, why did they double? Well, the people who sold you that knew that was going to happen because they know.
Or they didn't and just didn't care.
Oh, no, they knew.
Yeah. Well, somebody should have known.
Well, solar panels only produce power when the sun is shining.
Well, you know,
which isn't always the case. So, you know, I mean, we know how much it costs for the nameplate rating, but you do not know whether on any. I mean, right now I look out my window and it's cloudy. Okay, now does a solar panel produce something? Yeah,
We have to go to break here, but when you say somebody, this is what I'm seeing, Carl. And my view of the world. That's why I'm not. I'm just going to say I'm going to lob it out there, and you can feel free to tell me I'm nuts. But when I enjoy talking to people like you and Kevin, or when you say something, you may not always know the answer, but damn it, you're going to find it if it's available. Because the last thing you want to do is to go into any project, whatever it is, without knowing as much as you can about it. What I'm finding out, and everybody else on the show is pretty much like that, I'm finding out that is so rare. And when you say everybody knew it was going to create an increase in cost for power. I mean, yeah, you and I might have, if we'd have dug through it, we'd go find somebody, we'd ask the right question, we'd Google, we might even call up an engineer and ask him. Nobody else does that.
Chief, why do you go to the doctor?
Well, hopefully you go for routine maintenance, but actually you go when you're sick, I guess.
No, but but why do you go to the doctor?
Well, because hopefully he has some stuff that can help you out.
Because he's smarter than you are about medicine.
Well, sure.
right? You call an electrician because you don't know how to fix the electrical problem in your house.
English, motherfucker! Do you speak it? English!
There you go.
There you go. I mean, that's, you know, you hire somebody in a profession, no matter what the profession is, because that person is smarter than you are about whatever that thing is.
Well, that's the idea.
Well, that's what's supposed to be going on.
Right.
And if I put a shingle out, and I'm actually not smarter, I'm stupider, or worse, either I'm not paying attention, or I've been bought off, or it's malicious. We're not supposed to have that happening.
Do you, one quick story regarding somebody who I actually respect a lot, a lady who was she retired. She was a state senator, I think a state senator, from the Portage area, where Audrey used to have her little place down there in Ogden Dunes, and I still know a lot of people there. And the last time we went, there was some party, and the guy, Carl, the band was so friggin' loud, you couldn't stand her. Said, all right, I'm going out on the balcony. there's a picnic table out there. So out I go, and I sit down. This lady sits next to me. I go, hey, you're retired. We must have talked for an hour and a half. And I was, because she's just a regular lady. I mean, she's, you know, not somebody who's going to throw her on a world stage. She's not, I mean, how can I say it? She's a regular-looking person. You know, she's not going to be somebody who wows the world by her looks, nor would I. And I said, well, what was it like? She goes, it was fascinating, and it was like a real lot of work on top of it. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, well, my first 5 or 6 years, I worked my way up on the highway committee. And she says, you know, I'm pretty well-educated, and I'm not a dummy. She goes, it took me 3-4 years digging through to know everything there is to know, if there anybody could do that, regarding highway construction, contracts, who you can believe, who you can't, what's a good engineer. She goes, it's almost like a lifetime of stuff. So I right. did that, and I became, you know, chairman of that committee. So finally the governor says to me, hey, somebody's retiring over in medical stuff. And she goes, all right. And I went from being, you know, pretty expert at this one area. Now I'm the total dummy in the other one.
You're the idiot because you don't know anything, right?
And she goes, it worked. And she goes, by the time 3-4 years later, I can pretty much tell you chapter and verse who pays what, where the money is, where we need improvement. She goes, the rest of the people, they don't know that. But she goes, that's what they're counting on me to do on that committee,
right?
You know, it can actually work. I think Carl just we had a conversation last night regarding economics and power and those kinds of things, and where are the drop-dead points in a city that's having trouble like Chicago. And it was pretty fascinating from the economic point of view, and it takes in a whole bunch of variables in terms of how powerful some place is, monopoly power, all those kinds of things. But let's do that after break, because I thought it was fascinating. I wish you'd have been there. SP Futures up 2. We're up 2 now. NASDAQ Futures up 13. So whatever was a big problem over there between Israel and Iran is now being judged as not much of a problem. So that to be determined. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas on the board. This is one of those mornings where I'm not surely hell not recommending anybody not go to sleep at night, including me. But boy, all the action was 1, 2, 3 in the morning here, Greg. S&P futures now are up 5. Where was the downtick? Did they were they down what 40 or something at one point? NASDAQ futures are down 5. We've had Dow is down 28, but we had a 3% spike in oil last night, and Dow is down 1%. And we had a big spike in gold, which is now down $3. It's actually only down 3. It was up down 8 a few minutes ago. We had a massive turnaround here based on this attack from Israel to Iran that isn't really catching the same kind of, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, momentum you would expect this morning. So either didn't do any damage or the Israelis said that's enough or something's happening here. What it is isn't exactly clear. Wasn't that the song? Anyway, Nikkei, they didn't get the bounce back here, so they're down almost 3%. 1,011 down to 37,068. The Hang Seng's down 161. It's a full percent. Shanghai down 8, not as much, only 0.3%. Europe, these guys, they're still down, but not as much as they were. DAX down 95.5%. FTSE down 38.5%. CAC around only down 9 now, so they're almost back to even. So they're creeping to the upside here as well. Bonds down 6 basis points instead of going the other way. So that's 4.59. Bund unchanged at 2.48. Japan down 2 basis points, 0.85. We've got oil. Again, this is crazy. They're down, well, it's down 0.76%. So that's 66 cents. So they were up, I'm going to say, wait a minute. I'm going to say 60 cents. It's 82.13. I'm going to say, after break, Greg, I think it must have spiked over 85. It had to if it was up 3%. Natural gas down 2 cents, 173. RBOB down a penny, 269. Gold, which had spiked up, now is down 310, 23.94. Can't quite make it yet through this 2400 number. We'll see if it does today. Silver down 6 cents, 28.31. Crypto is up $1,900, which I guess you might expect, but I wonder where that spiked up. It's 3%, but it's been down all week. 65,300. And we have foreign exchange. Basically, the euro is actually up a little bit, so the dollar is, say, down a hair, but it has been real strong. 107 there, and it's 124.5 against the British pound. So, again, the dollar made a move to the upside, and it's been hanging there. Yesterday, as a way of review, Dow was up 22, S&P down 11, NASDAQ down 81. So today we'll see. We're jumping around the flat line right now. Crazy stuff, huh, Greg? What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Morning, everyone. 7:37 here in Chicago. 43 degrees, mostly sunny. High of 57 today. Phoenix, 68 right now, mostly sunny, very warm. High of 94. Traffic inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 31 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook, 62 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 37 minutes. The Ryan from 95th is 39 minutes. And the Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan is 31 minutes. Sports, Bulls play Miami tonight at 6. Cubs are postponed. That was yesterday. And Diamondbacks lose 0-5 at San Francisco. And also Hawks lose in overtime. That was 4-5. Diamondbacks lose 0-5. And then Hawks lose to Kings 4-5. So I got Chief.
What do you like tonight in the Bulls-Miami game?
I like the Bulls.
With Jimmy Buckets not playing?
Yeah.
What's his name? Caruso going to play?
I got momentum.
Yeah. Big Mo. Big Mo. What do you got? Is Caruso going to play?
Looks like Mr. Mo.
Yeah.
Momentum might be changing his address.
Carl, I wish you'd have been there last night. Would have been happy to buy you an adult beverage. Interesting discussion. Greg was on the show with us yesterday. Greg Rupczynski, my attorney buddy. And we got into this. And he's... You know, he's an attorney guy that kind of looks at what's there, and I don't know, he doesn't have the economic thing, but he has more of a legal background than I do. But we were talking about stuff like the power you see in some of these industries, and I talk about with you all the time, maybe with more than any other guest. And we started talking about Northwestern. And Northwestern, massive amounts of people donating money. They charge an arm and a leg for everything. They've got these doctors. And, you know, it's at a point where the guy who's running the place probably makes, what, $40 million a year or some number, and I'm sure thinks he's worth it. And if there's a piece of property around, they buy it. There's never anything they don't have. And if you go in the emergency room for 2 stitches, it's probably some number.
Right.
And the point is, his thing is, there's so much power there, you can never really combat it. You can't even get your hands around it. And I'm saying, when I had to get MRI for my back, you know, they were $6,000 or $7,000 or something, and there's places you can walk in and even tell them I need an MRI for my knee, and they'll give you one for $250 or something. I mean, and do a nice job, I think. What is the stress level? I mean, like we talked to you and I talked a couple weeks ago about the diabetes slash weight drug. What's the name of it? It was the
Ozempic. Yeah.
Yeah. It costs $1,000 and they can make it for $250 or something.
Yeah.
And it's and he says, well, the insurance companies are so powerful. These guys are so powerful. You know, it's just the way it is, and it's going to keep going that way. And I said, somewhere there's a limit. Somewhere, even though it's very troubling economics, one of these guys from Venezuela is going to put up a shingle and say, I'll put up to 5 stitches in somebody's finger for $50 and do as good a job as they do. I mean, I'm not in some place somewhere there's a breaking point here, and I realize that the breaking point, because of the economic power of these alleged monopolies, they actually have more power in a lot of ways, and I think Milton Friedman would agree with me. It's easy to say that when somebody's dead. I'm going to say he would feel they now have more power than even Commonwealth Edison, because they don't have the same kind of oversight. Not that you want anybody having state oversight regulation, but at least there's somebody looking at Commonwealth Edison. I mean, these other guys, they'll get your last, you know, they'll get the last skin cell out of you. Where does this break down? Because, you know, Ozempic is, they're getting away with 1,000. I don't know they could get away with 5,000. I think they probably couldn't get away with 10,000. Where does this stuff start to break down, and when does the rest of society say, I don't care what it is, I can't pay it? Do they start importing it from some other place? Do they just not use it? Do people just have, you know, they put some big Band-Aid when they shouldn't need 5 stitches? Where does it start to crack, Carl? Cause it can't go on forever, because at some point people don't have the dough.
Well, yeah, and the problem that we have, one of the reasons that this has gotten so acute all throughout the economy, and one of the huge drivers of inflation, and nobody wants to go there, but this is really where most of the problem lies. Okay,
well, careful. Sorry to interrupt, but it's not the problem with the CPI, because they dodge it. It's the problem with you and me.
Well, I understand that, but yeah. I'm talking about inflation, not as what gets published in the CPI, but inflation as you and I experience it every time we go to the store and we buy something. Okay, the medical system went from 3 to 4% of GDP to 20. I mean, you think about that. There's no logic to that. Okay, technology always. I just got into it with somebody last night, in fact, that was talking about that Microsoft just demonstrated using one desktop video card from NVIDIA to produce in real time a deep fake of someone using just a couple of photographs to train it. Okay. And this person was allegedly speaking in real time in video.
Now, really?
They actually were not. Now, this is something that's been able to be done for a while. You know, I mean, all your modern video games, model humans running around shooting people and things like this, right? Well, they've actually got, you know, it's gotten better, a lot better. And now all of a sudden you've got a company that's demonstrating being able to do this using a single $2,000 video card that can go in a consumer-grade level PC. Now, of course, you know, pretty high, pretty expensive one. You're still not talking about something that can be done for a couple hundred bucks. But this is something that prior to that was the sort of thing that filmmakers, you know, workstations sat there and ground at for hours and hours and hours to produce 2 minutes worth of footage, right? This is in real time. All right, so their argument was that this meant that now NVIDIA is going to be worth $5,000 a share instead of, you know, $900 or whatever it is today. I guess it's
$848, up a buck.
$846 or whatever, yeah, is last night's close. Okay, and I said, no, you're wrong. It's exactly the opposite. NVIDIA is going to be lucky if it trades for $100 in a few years. And the reason is, every single piece of technology that becomes commoditized, every single one, in my lifetime, has drawn both competition and lower prices.
That's because they haven't been able to find patents on them like you can with the medical stuff.
Well, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, but patents run out, okay?
Well, it's 17 years. You can steal a lot in 17 years.
Well, I understand that, but I have a diesel-fired air heater in my camper, my RV conversion, that when Webasto's patent was valid was $1,000. I just bought one that was designed in Germany, manufactured in China, same place that Webasto originally came from, and was $110.
Wow.
Okay. And it is. And if you take the cover off of it, you look at it, it's the same thing. All right. So, I mean, you know, there's no innovation there. It was just, how much was Webasto making? What was their operating margin on those things?
Oh,
you know,
massive.
17.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, it's just a cast piece of metal with fins that burns diesel fuel, all right? It's got a couple of fans in it. I mean, that's that and a computer to control it. That's all it is. But and that's the price of innovation, is that we allow people to have a limited time monopoly, and you know, and they make a fortune at it, all right? Fine. The thing is that when these things get commoditized, if you remember back in the late 1990s, Intel was going to be the most valuable company on the planet.
Oh, yeah.
As personal computing and everything else took off. What actually happened? Well,
the list of people from that era, 99, was Intel. See if I'm right on this, Carl. Intel, Oracle, Microsoft, Cisco, and was it Dell?
Yeah. But you know, what actually happened was that the processor got commoditized, the computer got commoditized, and as a result, instead of having to buy a new one every year or two to keep up with whatever you wanted to do, as they got better, it got to the point that we're in now. My laptop is about 6 years old, and I have, yes, the new ones are faster, but none of the new ones do something that I currently can't reasonably do with the one I have now. So unless it breaks, I have no particular reason to do that. Same thing with the desktop machine and the server I have here at the house. The other thing is that at the server at the house, I was able to buy takeout processors that go in there and replace the main central processing unit. It's 50% faster, and it was under $100. All right, so I gave myself a 50% performance boost for under $100 in about 10 minutes to swap that chip.
Yeah, well, could do that. I can't do that.
Well, but that's what happens in commoditization,
yeah, right.
Okay? And the thing is, that's not the first time that's happened. The same thing happened with the last generation of
servers. But the other stuff, that stuff doesn't have the whole specter of insurance on top of it.
I understand that, Chief. But look, this is the same thing. You know, so there, all these people are yelling about this stuff with NVIDIA, right? And I said, look, I have a graphics card in my computer that is a couple of generations back. It's about a third of the power of that board, and it's $300, okay? In another 2 or 3 years, that capability that they just demonstrated this is $2,000 is going to cost $300.
Right.
And when it does, there goes the margin, right? And it's going to happen because it happens every single time. And so, you know, and again, you're right. Where it doesn't happen in the medical field is because we have people that flagrantly violate the law. And then they build a structure on top of it, and they get enough people employed by it that anybody within the government that turns around and says, you know what, we're going to throw a few people in jail for this. Oh, my God, you're going to end up with 15% of the people in the country out of work.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Right.
All right. Well, gee, how nice. Except when you keep pushing this, okay, the bleed through that comes from it. Michigan has dealt with this forever. Their auto insurance is ridiculously expensive because if you get in a car wreck and you need an MRI, it's three times the price as if you took the same injury by walking your dog on the sidewalk. And the reason for it is simply because they can, and nobody goes to jail. And that's why car insurance is so ridiculously expensive in that state. They passed a no-fault law to try to address, you know, the ambulance chasing thing, and what they ended up with was worse.
Well,
so
it ended up, somebody wrote it purposely to be worse.
Well, of course, and you know, and has there have been attempts to try to do something about it in Michigan over the years? They all fail, and the reason they fail is because everybody screams about how you're going to end up putting, you know, all these
doctors. We have a listener. Well, we have more than one. A listener from down somewhere near Indianapolis, and we were talking. I think it was you and I were talking one day about auto insurance, and it turns out the guy sends me an email and goes, you know, my Ford truck. Some lady's texting. She whacks into the back of my Ford truck, and you know, it's going to be whatever. But the thing is, I forget what year it was, but it's pretty new. And he said they were having problems getting parts, right? So it's at the auto place, so they give them some other thing to drive, which, of course, if you've ever driven a truck all the time, the last thing you want is drive some little car around.
Right.
They weren't all happy with that. But I said, hey, keep me posted, will you? So every once in a while, I get an email. It ended up being, I'm going to say, 10, 12 weeks. And then when he got it, it wasn't right. He had to bring it back for another week because they forgot to put one side of the back axle in right or something. But these guys had to pay for a loaner for 13 weeks, and God knows how much. The guy is jammed, and the price was huge, and
yeah.
What the hell?
I mean, Chief, just look at, you know, we all love all this fancy, you know, oh, you got these nice fancy LED headlights, right, and taillights and all this stuff, right? Well, the housing, you know, I mean, if you get smacked, you don't get hit very hard for, I mean, it's plastic. They break,
yeah.
Right? Okay, guess what? They're $2,000.
Yeah, you would think they would be cheap because they're plastic and they're lousy, but they're not.
No, and by the way, the only place you can get them is from the manufacturer.
Yeah.
Okay, because it's all integrated in electronics, and so there are no aftermarket parts. The DRL and turn signal housings on my Suburban are $30 a piece.
Well, my anti-lat brake unit on my new truck is causing me some issues, and if you can find one from a dealer, they want $1,700.
I have a friend of mine that has a...
You know how much it costs to rebuild the one that's in there if I can get it to somebody? It's like $350, and they claim it's better than new. I mean, how can that even be in the same... That's even not even in the same planet. But I did tell you about the guy where Audrey bought her car. We've known the guy forever. He's a friend of her late cousin, nice guy. He said they now have at this big dealership a loan person for repairs, and not just new cars or used cars. They go, you got to be kidding me. He goes, no. Somebody's repairs are so expensive, nobody's got the dough. So I real quick, I tell these stories only because I think they show what's going on and what you're saying. I went to get an alignment for my truck, right? And because it had needed a, you know, I just got it. So I go over to Firestone, and they goes, all right. Of course, like, get a load of this, Carl. I actually scheduled it online. I mean, aren't you proud of me? And so, of course, I got a 3:30 appointment. I get there, and the guy goes, we'll get you right in. And I'm sitting there, and I'm watching. They had a game on TV, and it's 4 o'clock, and it's 4:30. And I hear all this in the background talking about the machine they just bought to do alignments, which cost them $500,000, for God's sake. And it's not working. They're trying to download this, and they're calling the manufacturer, and nothing's right. So finally, they tell this guy. Now, I'm sitting there going, Audrey's got dinner reservations with some couple. And so I'm saying, okay, hey, I got to get out of here. So they go through the whole routine. All of a sudden, I go out to get my truck, and it's on the rack. So I say to the dude,
I thought you said it was busted.
And I thought you said it was busted. He goes, it's not busted for your truck. It's busted for his truck. And I go, wait a minute. He goes, this new Toyota he's got has got 6 sensors regarding...
I'll have to talk to the computer.
Yeah, regarding the alignment of the truck.
Right.
And he says, if we can't reset the sensors, even though the alignment's fine, all this stuff's going to be going off. So they ended up telling the guy to take it to the Toyota dealer on Monday, and they'd pay for it.
Yeah.
Because then they were going to try and get the manufacturer out to reset their system. He goes, we can do yours in 10 minutes. I was done in 10 minutes. Then the guy, it was supposed to be $100, he only charged me $50 because he made me wait so long. And I got... So he goes, we had the thing aligned 2 hours ago. We just can't get the sensors to go to be reset.
It's just, you know, that kind of stuff is just crazy. And yet we all, you know, we all love this stuff when it goes our way or whatever. And, you know, we want all this pretty and, you know, whatever have you. And nobody cares about, you want to know why your car insurance is so effing expensive? Well, that's the reason.
Yeah.
All right. And the same thing with homeowners insurance. All right, I mean, you know, I'm going through, you know, quoting it with everybody I can get my hands on at the moment because the renewal quotes that I got for both are, I mean, 20% increases. Okay, no claims, no accidents, no tickets, no nothings. And
this,
you know,
is your, auto or is it your house?
Both.
All right.
And I mean, you know,
well, the house. I mean, you're never going to get me to shed a tear for an insurance company, but I would bet you've been living there, what have you been there, 4 years, I'm going to guess?
Coming on 5, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to say if you got a tree landed on your roof 5 years ago, assuming there's a tree around your place, I'm going to guess that they want you to pay 50% more, maybe 60, than 5 years ago, and I'm going to say that the cost to fix the roof is doubled.
Oh, yeah, that wouldn't surprise. Yeah, absolutely, it wouldn't surprise at all. And, and then you want to know, what the situation is. Well, that's the situation, okay? The rebuild costs, of course, have gone up as well, all right? And so people always, you can yell about the expenses, but the reality is that it is these kinds of monopolist practices that go unpunished, and then you have depression of the labor base, which ruins your ability to actually earn a living, okay? And the illegal immigration, I don't care what you... Look, I know somebody who's in an industry that uses a lot of illegal labor, all right? I don't know if they do, because I don't know them that well, but I know the industry does. It's in the building trades. And they just had a meeting because the state of Tennessee has decided they've had enough of this blankety-blanking crap and has passed a law that potentially can not only lead to if these people get picked up, they're going to have to be put under detainers and turned over to the feds. But in addition to that, if there is if they've committed a crime and it's a felony, the penalty is now enhanced up to and including life in prison.
Well, Carol, how do you? I'm not. I certainly am not going to argue against enforcement of law, but this seems like it's a really new problem, but as you and I know, it's not.
It's not.
I mean, every golf course had people that lived there and so forth, but there was a time, I'm going to say it was before COVID, so I'll say 10 years ago, 9 years ago, and I'm living in the same place. And all of a sudden, everybody decides one year, not everybody, but you know how it goes, one guy gets remodeled, done, everybody does. So all of a sudden, there's probably five houses that are getting gutted inside or something, or putting a new roof, or something, not a roof, but they got people doing stuff, because these houses are 100 years old, so they need stuff done. Right. And all of a sudden, there's this Russian guy, and he parked in front of my place every night, so finally, I started BSing with him a little bit, and everybody was up in outrage, because people are using carpenters that weren't union, and a lot of them were illegals. Right. Now, they didn't just swim across the river yesterday, but they were here, they were Russian guys or whatever, and I said to him, I go, what's going on with all this stuff? And he goes, I'm from Russia. I don't really have, because I have a, what do you say, I'm not here, I'm not a citizen, but I think he might have he had something. He paid Social Security.
Well, he had a green card.
And he said, I'm not competing against anybody. It's not like five union guys show up tomorrow and say they want the job. There's nobody there. Nobody wants to be a carpenter here. He goes, I make good money. He said, but if you don't want me here, I'll go to London because they want me there. He goes, it's not like everybody's kid is leaving, that is screwing up in high school, decides I'm going to be a carpenter tomorrow and is looking for a job and actually wants to work all day.
Absolutely.
He goes, there's nobody. If somebody wants my job and they're a citizen, you know what? Maybe they should have it, but they don't.
but here's the thing, all right?
You and I think they should want it, but they don't.
No, they don't. They don't want it at the offered wage.
Well, okay. Our carpenters do pretty good.
Well, I understand that, but in a lot of these cases, I mean, look, putting roofs on is pretty tough, especially in the summer.
But
right?
These guys were inside; they were doing kitchens. And stuff.
I know, yeah, but yeah. I'm saying,
those guys work like dogs. Those roofers, jeez.
Well, yeah, they work like dogs, but you know what? If they're illegal Mexicans, they'll do it for $5 an hour, and no taxes.
Yeah, I mean, you're abusing them. I get that part, but.
Well, right, and guess what? Will Americans do that job? Yeah, but not at $5.
Right.
Okay.
There's people who won't do it at all.
Well, you can pay me enough to clean toilets.
Well, yeah, but Carol, how many times have I got to tell you per show? We're not everybody. I mean,
I understand that, but the point is that, come on, man, you study economics, you understand how supply and demand works. If there is a demand side imbalance which drives up price, there is a price at which
there
that
is,
market
but
will clear.
The
supply is there. You got 90. How many tens of millions of people are sitting on the couch in the not in labor force number? We don't know what they're doing.
I understand that, but I'm saying that. I guess my whole economic treatise this week, and I'm sure as hell not getting it across. Somehow or another, what used to be really easy economically is becoming very sticky. If you and I have a saloon and we're charging $10 a beer, it used to be real easy for somebody on the block to grab another building, slap a bar in there, and he's charging $5. That's getting harder and harder to do.
Well, I understand that, but we have put these repressive distortions into the labor market for so long that people say there's no way we can change it because it'll destroy blah, 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 you know, whatever. That's not true. It won't destroy it. What it will do is rebalance things. And the other thing that will happen is that the tens of billions of dollars that get sent across the border into Mexico and Venezuela, whatever remittances, will stay here in the United States.
Well, I don't disagree with that. There would be economists, we got to go, that would say the money down there should make customers and we should all be happy, should all balance out.
It doesn't work like that. We tried that.
I know, we tried that. But let's talk about that on Tuesday. Why isn't it working? I mean, it's and if it doesn't, what's the new model?
S&P futures. It's called corruption, my friend.
We'll talk about it on Tuesday. Have a nice weekend, buddy. S&P futures down 250. NASDAQ futures down 28. Market doesn't know what to make of this last night. I guess we'll find out as the day wears on. Talk about it on Monday.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.